This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. For your Thursday, there it is, Thursday. Matt and Sasha here today. Good to have you with us. A lot to get to. Hey, we're guest free, so no guest today. We were doubled up yesterday. We had Stein and Schechter. I mean, you can go listen to both of those on SoundCloud. But we, of course, are guest free today, but your phone calls are always welcome. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It is getting a little chilly out there. I will say this. It's you can tell we got a front coming through. I went hiking today. In Minnesota, you get a weird perspective here. It's February. Where we are right now, we should be about 15 degrees is the high, 2-3 degrees is the low, maybe 5 degrees. It's when it's 40, that's pretty odd. That's like really, really, really odd. So it looks like we might get some snow this weekend. We'll keep an eye on the weather forecast with that. But Sasha, to start us off today, we have two stories of love. That's right. Two Ooh. Stories of love.
Should I get that music on?
No. I don't know. You weren't here when we talked about Zug Zug on Monday, were you?
I was not.
Do you know who Zug Zug is?
No, please enlighten me.
Zug Zug is the caveman art piece over at Theo Worth Park. And if you go out there, yeah. it's on Theo Worth Parkway, past the lodge, past the chalet, and it's right there on the left, north of 55 in Minneapolis, Theo Worth Park. And by the way, a phenomenal park. Theo Worth is an amazing park. Zug Zug is an art piece. These artists have got permission to put, and it's basically like a cosplay piece for the Scooby-Doo episode where the caveman from the 1968-69, where, you know, it's like a big square block of ice with a caveman figure inside. It's not like a real person. At least I don't think so. I mean, that would be morbid. Anywho, he basically, it's a caveman guy, and it's Zug Zug. His name is Zuggy. I call him Zuggy. You know, he and I bonded. It was clearly he understood he and I were together. But Zug Zug is there. A lot of people are going out to see Zug Zug because it is a caveman in a block of ice out at Theo Worth Park. All right. So, yeah, once again, past the lodge, past the chalet, it's right there on the left-hand side, okay?
I'm going, yeah.
The bigger challenge for you, I got a much larger challenge for you. Zuggy apparently has got a main squeeze. No joke. Zara, Z-A-R-A-H, which I'm going to guess, all right, you understand, I get Zug Zug really is, you know, a drunk guy trying to remember Zuzu Petals from, It's a Wonderful Life. No one's going to be named Zug Zug. There are people named Zara, so I don't know, but there is a female partner for Zuggy who is mysteriously somewhere in the state. No joke. They have made Zara, Zug Zug's main squeeze, and have placed it in another park, and their argument is they're trying to encourage people to get out there and find Zara, Zug Zug's partner. Now, the two clues they have said is, one, it's not at Theo Worth Park, so you don't have to go scour and go hike through the unpaved trails at Theo Worth. Although, I mean, I have a feeling probably a lot of people already have. So it's not at Theo Worth, and it's also not in the city of Minneapolis at any other Minneapolis park. But Zara is somewhere in the state of Minnesota in another park, hidden to my knowledge. I don't think anyone's found Zara. I mean, the stories today make it imply that no, that Zara is still out there. And much like when we went into this pandemic lockdown, and I was telling people to get out in the parks because the parks are open. This is kind of the whole point. They want people in winter to get outside. I mean, it's the exact same thing as why they did the winter carnival. The Winter Carnival was started to show the people on the East Coast that it wasn't some cursed land, that we actually like the cold, we actually like winter, we can actually do pretty well with this stuff. And so they started doing the Winter Carnival, and it's been a lot of fun. We've enjoyed it quite a bit. And so this is, you know, this is kind of one of those things where they want to try to get people out and enjoy, show people, hey, you know what, we do enjoy the parks, and you can go find Zug Zug. Once again, Zug Zug's at Theo Worth. Czar is the question. So the search is on, and I don't know. I mean, it could be anywhere from, I'm going to guess, Grand Marais to Pipestone. And so you got a lot of territory to look at. I can't believe they would have put Czar out in the middle of, like, you know, like Bemidji State Park on like some back snowmobile trail, which, you know, 20 miles from the main road. It's got to be somewhere. I mean, if you go to see Zug Zug, Zug Zug is actually not even a tenth of a mile off the road there. And plenty of parking. You'll easily be able to go see Zug Zug. It's a little, because so many people walk there. It's basically an ice chain, you know, thing. It's nasty. But, you know, I got to believe Czar is someplace much more accessible. So if you know where Czar is at, let me know. I'm not against a road trip. I'm absolutely not against a road trip. Go out to some park and go see it.
Not like we have anything better to do, you know?
It really is. I mean, it's have you seen us? We're not exactly the most organized crew here. So there's that. So there's love story number one. Are you ready? I mean, seriously, are you freaking ready for love story number two?
Give it to me.
Are you sure?
Maybe not, but we'll see. We got to take that risk.
I am going to warn people who are listening at home. If you have an unsettled stomach, or if you're a tender tummy, I want you to be careful here, because this one's going to be a rough one, all right? According to dailymail.com, all right, I can do this. Trump-loving MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell has had a secret romance with 30 Rock actress Jane Krakowski, and has wooed her with flowers and champagne in a relationship that baffled her friends. It's not just her friends who are baffled. Okay. Oh, my God. I just imagine that Mike Lindell's body is just like one of those pillows. Just, yeah. This is once again, dailymail.com reporting this. Now, once again, not exactly the most sharp news outlet, but I'll read the story. In recent days, Lindell has been threatened legal action by Dominion Voting Systems and dumped by a host of big box stores like Bed Bath & Beyond, Kohl's, and Wayfair have all dropped his product in the wake of the former crack addict turned CEO's continued promotion of false claims of election fraud and apparent enthusiasm for martial law. Now, DailyMail.com has learned that Lindell, 59, was let go rather more personally last summer when his passionate romance with Krakowski, 52, came to an end after a weekend together at the actress's rented Hamptons beach house. Ugh. According to one friend of the relationship between the unlikely pair, there was an open secret in New York's West Village where the unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt star and her Minnesota-based lover, were regularly seen in each other's company. The source said it surprised many of Jane's friends because she's such an icon in the gay community, but here she is dating one of Trump's biggest business backers. I mean, he was seen in the West Wing and at Trump rallies. He's probably reasonable for half the revenue of the Fox News. We'd always joke that Jane had so much money, couldn't she afford her own MyPillow? Wow. The relation struck some as doubly puzzling, thanks to the fact that Krakowski has previously expressed views that the opposite end of the political spectrum than Lindell's robust Republicanism. According to one former friend, Jane was a huge fan of Obama, and her viewpoint, by the nature of her business and the Broadway audience she plays to and calls her boys, certainly speaks Democratic. Another source who spoke with DailyMail.com on condition of anonymity struggled to see what Krakowski saw in the multimillionaire betting titan, but revealed that he had wooed the actress for close to a year, showering her with gifts and flowers.
It goes to show there is someone out there for everybody.
Oh, God. God, how terrifying would it be? That's like the beginning of a Twilight Zone episode. Mike Lindell's sent you flowers. Whoa. The source said he sent flowers to her almost every week and champagne and bottles of different liquor. She said she had known about him for about 8 years, and they've been friends, but they started a relationship about a year ago. I don't know exactly what she saw in him, but she seemed happy and thought he was a good man. According to the source, Krakowski and Lindell met in a studio while filming a show, and the relationship continued on from there. I'm going to guess he was filming one of his TV commercials. Must have been there. The romance was not, the source said, all plain sailing, they revealed. They would fight, and Jane would throw all of the gifts that he had given her away. Then they would make up, and there would be more gifts again. Once again, I'm just reading out of the Daily Mail. I'm not attesting to this. I actually have some serious doubts this is a true story. I can't, because what they said, Jane Krakowski is a known Democrat, and she is, you know, a lot of fans within the gay community. That is not someone, it's not all of a sudden, it'd be like me dating Jeanine Pirro. Oh, God. Oh.
Is this what people mean when they say reach across the aisle?
Oh, God. Seriously, this is, oh, are you scared, kids? One friend told DailyMail.com Jane was impressed that Mike had turned his life around from the recovery from crack cocaine and alcohol addiction to now being sober worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm not going to deny that actually is a good story. Father of four, Lindell, has often spoken about how he lost his money, his marriage, and nearly his life in his hopeless addiction before a moment of divine intervention saw him turn his life around and in 2009 achieve sobriety through prayer. Got news for you, by the way. The whole martial law thing, that's more Romans, not, never mind. You got to reread that whole Bible because I'll tell you what, martial law, not the side of Jesus. Just going to say. Friend said that Jane would always say how fantastic he was and that he was a role model that her son Bennett could look up to. The pillow guy? In an assessment that has raised eyebrows among some who know her, as DailyMail.com revealed that Lindell has settled dozens of federal lawsuits across 8 different states for fraudulent advertising and bogus claims and being a sleep expert, Lindell has long been a vocal champion of Trump. He appeared alongside him in the White House last spring in the bizarre Rose Garden address, during which he called for more religion in public schools and urged people to use periods of pandemic isolation for prayer. He has a solid. He's refused to accept that Trump lost the election, attending rallies in Iowa, Minnesota, Michigan, and Pennsylvania to stop the steal. Most recently and bizarrely, he claimed to have uncovered proof that Trump had won 10 million more votes than President-elect Joe Biden. And, of course, he had the plans that he was clutching, which called for immediate action to save the Constitution, and referencing the Insurrection Act and called for a shakeup in CIA leadership. And while Lindell has channeled all of his energies into the doomed cause of saving Trump's presidency since his split with Krakowski, the actress has a new man, a new show. She is currently fronting the reboot of the game show Name That Tune. According to one friend, Krakowski's new relationship signaled the end of her romance with Lindell. Okay, all right. They do use the word lover at one point in this story, but I'm wondering, is this really a relationship on that level? That Lindell meets, okay, yeah, and I'm reading out of the Daily Mail story. This is their story. Now I'm just, you know, as I read, I'm thinking about this. What I'm reading sounds more like a guy that meets a movie star wow, she's pretty, she's cute. I've got the money to send her flowers every week. I got the money to send her nice bottles of champagne. She's not going to turn that away. Of course not. Why? So I kind of almost wonder if that this is not so much a relationship on that level as more of a relationship on a he had a crush on her and she'd tolerate him, seemed like a nice guy. And once again, the story is not bad. I mean, it kind of takes a turn there when he goes into the Trump world. But, I mean, recovering addict, you know, makes good in life. Well, that's a good story. But the reality is that, you know, I just can't see how and this is a conversation I've had numerous times with numerous people. If you were dating someone you knew was the polar opposite of you politically, could you sleep with them? Tell the truth. That's like a instant turn off. No. It'd be like having spinach in their teeth or something like that. Another source said, Jane didn't really talk about why they broke up, but said she didn't like the way he treated women sometimes, particularly his ex-wife. The friend added, maybe if they stayed together, they would have focused on Jane rather than trying to question the outcome of the election and advise Trump on martial law. When approached by DailyMail.com, Krakowski denied even knowing Lindell and said only, I've never met the man. Lindell said, I never heard of Jane Krakowski. Could this just be a planted fake story?
So possibly. I mean, this is the Daily Mail, too, you know.
It is. It could be. I mean, they're not like Bat Boy kind of making stuff up, you know. But at the same time, it seems like they talked to enough people here. And I got to believe, if this is fake, boy, are you setting yourself up to get sued like you wouldn't believe by both Krakowski and Lindell. I'm doubting this story. I'm going to go that this story is, at least we're not hearing the whole thing about the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
I just cannot believe someone that is so ingrained within the Broadway and theater and the arts and television and in movies. It's those people are generally, you know, it's you're very woke, for lack of a better way to say it. You know, you're very, you know, GLBTQ friendly. You're very open minded. You care about other people and that sort of thing. You know, you usually it's the case. I can't see. And Jane Krakowski doesn't have any kind of reputation. It's not like Scott Baio or something like that, where, you know, you got a guy who's basically, you know, a big Trump guy. You know, there's nothing pointing to the fact that she's, you know, a conservative Republican.
Maybe so. It's something about the bad boy, you know, something like that. I don't know.
Wow. I'll tell you what, during the commercial break here, I'm going to go get the cutout of Lindell and I'll let you determine hot or not. Oh, God. All right. Sorry to upset you. Gary, I'll get your call here in just a break, after the break here. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Go after DailyMail.com. They're the ones that are publishing this. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Imagine for a minute you get up in. I'm not buying it, man. I am not buying it. I want to go burn my hands off after touching the cutout, for God's sakes. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Gary is in Minneapolis. He wanted to chime in. Welcome on in, Gary Bear.
Hello, Matt. Let me just say real quick, talking about reaching across the aisle to get a wife, I've always been amazed by James Carville and his right-wing wife.
Well, anyways, John Oliver, I will say John Oliver is married to a former Republican operative as well, if I'm not mistaken. It does happen. I think for the people that can do that, I almost wonder, is the politics just really kind of almost an act, or is it just something that, you know, you realize I'm not going to talk to that person about that at all?
But anyway, thanks for the beautiful calendar you guys sent me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
He sort of inspired me to do a few art pieces from it, and I get the majority of my art from photos I take when I go around, travel around or whatever. But I also use greeting cards, calendars, and I got a book full of pictures of birds, too, so it inspired me on. So thanks again for the calendar. Tell everybody that.
No problem. Thank you very much. I appreciate you giving us a call. Gary in Minneapolis. Thank you very much. 952-946-6205. Speaking of Lindell's best buddy here, the city of Minneapolis is going to recover $100,000 in costs related to providing city services during a Trump rally the city owned Target Center on October 10th, 2019. Now, I want to remind everyone listening right now, when this was being put on and Mayor Fry was like, he doesn't pay his bills, we want him to pay his bills. Every Republican was like, you're being wrong. He's a billionaire. He has the money. You just don't want him here in town. No, Jacob Fry was looking at every other case of this guy stiffen every other community he has been in, and he was only making the point we would be damn fools to trust him. And you guys went over to his office. Remember when they set up that fake little protest with like 8 people? And of course, Star Tribune covered it like, massive protest at mayor's office. You know, that sort of thing. But, you know, it just, he was saying this because there's a lot of money here that the taxpayers are going to have to pick up if the guy doesn't pay his bill. And lo and behold, Mr. Billionaire, Mr. He Can Write a Check Tomorrow, Mr. Bob Kroll's best buddy. Guess what? He hasn't paid his bill. He hasn't paid the bill. And boy, Bob, wouldn't it be great for your police department if we actually had some of that money? That'd be great. Maybe you should call your buddy and tell him to pay his bill. Because I guarantee you all the people that are willing to allow Trump not to pay this bill, that if they found out an African-American hadn't paid his, I don't know, electricity or heat bill, they'd shut it off. Shut it off. Don't give them any more. They're mooching. Anyway, that's just an observation. City of Minneapolis will recover $100,000 in costs related to providing city services during the Trump rally in October of 2019. The settlement agreement came to the operator of Target Center, and the city still has to be approved by the Minneapolis City Council. When that happens, it'll be the first time a locality has offset the cost of a Trump campaign rally after the event, the news release said. As we continue confronting extraordinary challenges, at the local level, our federal leaders have the opportunity and obligation to stand up for the taxpayers by ensuring that they are not left footing the bill for political events, Fry said in a statement. We have the duty to protect free speech regardless of the content, but we don't have to subsidize it. The city previously identified $200,000 in municipal costs associated with traffic control, temporary banners, public works construction, and other services that it believes were eligible to be reimbursed. The operator of the Target Center has agreed to pay half, with the city noting that some remaining expenditures for services rendered to protect First Amendment free speech and assembly rights are ineligible for reimbursement. The Target Center operator will make the payments to the city over a 3-year period, with the money going into the city's general fund. The agreement also says the city will work with the Target Center to avoid similar issues in the future. Well, it's a good news because Trump's never going to run again. But, I mean, if he comes into town and he wants to do a rally at Target Center or Target Field or at the U.S. Bank Stadium, don't, unless the owner of that facility is going to cover all the expenses, don't let him. He's a crook. He's a crook, for God's sakes. You fools. God, you people are fools that followed him and thought he's a great businessman. You intentionally had no willingness to go actually look at what he actually did and how in the world that he 100% just would screw over anyone that basically he didn't want to pay. I mean, he constantly did it with his buildings. I mean, there are cities where Donald Trump is not allowed to build buildings. There are cities that have passed ordinances which say that if you want to build a building in our town, you have to pay up front, to which all of a sudden Trump has no interest in building a building in that town. He will go on out to say, like, the The concrete masons. And he'll say to the concrete guys, hey, come on out here, play the concrete. I'll pay you twice as much as your usual rate. They send the guys on out there. They get the concrete. They go do it. And then he never pays the bill. And when they go to him and say, hey, where's the bill? You're going to, where's the money you owe us? He says, I'll give you 1/10 of what I would have promised before. And if you dare not just take this check and walk out of here and say, thank you very much, I will sue you and you'll get nothing. And that is kind of his modus operandi. He is a crook. And you fools, and you didn't care. Wasting taxpayer dollars, if it was Donald Trump, you love it. It's because he's owning the libs. It's the taxpayer dollars that he's wasting are in the city of Minneapolis, and that is perfectly fine for you. You could care less about the city of Minneapolis wasting taxpayer dollars. You guys love it when we build stadiums for the sports teams that you guys incessantly watch outstate. It's just the fact that this, you're just hypocrites, and just admit it. He was a crook. He was a crook. Don't look at me and say he was a misunderstood little angel. He was a crook. He was an absolute horrible human being. And anyone that was dumb enough to think that he was ever going to be an honest individual, I mean, good luck. I mean, all you guys, I mean, nothing is funnier watching Parler implode right now and these far right-wing posts implode. He lied to us. There's no pardon for us. Nope. Not at all. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. We'll get into the Minnesota coronavirus update when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, I should mention the weather forecast doesn't tell really the whole story. We got coming up here on Saturday, snow 1 to 3 inches possible during the day, mainly afternoon, then the snow mainly before midnight. Heavy at times, accumulations 3 to 5 inches are possible. I think for most of the metro area, at least it sounds like it's south of the Twin Cities are expecting some more snow. But in the metro core itself, it was like 2 to 5 inches, somewhere around there. So just keep that in mind. Saturday and Saturday night looked like it could be a little bit of a rough one heading out on the roadways. 952-946-6205. Todd's in North Minneapolis. Todd, thanks for holding. Welcome on in.
Heading out on the roadways. Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Yeah.
Todd, thanks for holding. You might want to turn down your radio, okay there, Todd?
Okay. Sorry about that.
No problem. Better? Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, okay, well, I was calling about the actress, what was her name, Jane Krakowski?
Krakowski, yeah, from 30 Rock.
Yeah, and the Mike Lindell guy. I actually believe that story because I know of a few women that are like that, that are liberal, that are LGBT friendly, who say they prefer dating conservative men because they think liberal men are wimps. Like that's no lie. Like this girl I knew, she was dating this guy that his dishwasher broke, and he called somebody to fix it, and she thought that he was gay.
Well, all right, now and, I'm not going to go down this road, Todd. You're done. First of all, yeah, it sounds like that call was basically just changed. Like you liberals are weak, but no. Dude's clutching a pillow like it's his, you know, it's his iron lung. I've seen how frantic this dude has been. I don't see masculinity in Mike Lindell at all. I see a lot of weakness, as a matter of fact. Second of all, have you seen the gun show here? Bang, bang. That's right. Yeah, baby. I got your liberal hot sausage right here. Anyway, and thirdly, dude, you are such an absolute jackass, Todd, for even putting out the idea that someone's sexual orientation is an insult. You petulant little tiny man. I'm sorry that is who you are. I don't want that guy ever to call back again. He is not allowed on the show, period. I don't even care if you're relaying a story. That's not a story. Anyone who's actually got a half a brain wouldn't have ever presented the story like that. That was an attempt to basically just kind of badmouth liberal guys. So long, farewell. Good. And seriously, stop being. Don't be such a jerk, man. Don't be such a jerk in using terms like that. That's just disgusting and inappropriate on a thousand different levels. You know what strength is? Learning, being intelligent, listening. That's what's being that's what strength is. 952-946-6205. Let's go into the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Senior citizens started at nine test sites. Vaccinations for senior citizens started at nine test sites in Minnesota on Thursday, the latest effort to contain a pandemic that has caused more than 6,000 deaths in state residents. The Minnesota Department of Health reported 32 more deaths on Thursday, bringing the state total to 6,011, only 28 days after surpassing 5,000. The state also reported 1,292 newly diagnosed infections, bringing the total there to 450,762. Minnesota's latest milestone came amid increased vaccinations, 203,839 people at least receiving first doses of two-dose COVID-19 vaccines, and declines in the latest wave of the pandemic. Only 98 people with COVID-19 were being treated in intensive care units in Minnesota hospitals on Wednesday, the lowest number since September 21st. The seven-day average positivity rate of diagnostic testing also dropped to 5.1% as of January 12th, an indication of less transmission in the novel coronavirus that causes COVID-19. That's actually really good. To be able to get down to 5.1% is really good. State officials remain concerned that another pandemic wave could emerge later this winter and underscore the need to hasten the administration of Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines that were first approved for use this last month. Minnesota's totals include 41,984 people who have received both doses of the vaccine. And that's good news. That is very good news. Because those people, you know, I think it's a week after you get the second vaccine, you are, for the most part, vaccinated against coronavirus, which is great. But still, in a state of 5.5 million people, 41,000 is not exactly a lot. Minnesota first prioritized limited doses of vaccine per federal guidance through roughly 500,000 healthcare workers. As a matter of fact, I want to bring in a different story as well here to tie into this. And that's the story that was out today that apparently pharmacies want in on the vaccine distribution. And, you know, and kind of criticizing these nine administration sites that they put around the state. I want to take a moment to point out that the reason why we're having to limit the coronavirus vaccine is because the Trump administration lied. This is not Governor Walz making stuff up. The Trump administration lied about how much vaccine they had. So we can't just let this stuff go willy-nilly. We need to make sure the people who need it most are getting the doses that they need. Which brings up the other point here. I don't care about, I know in Texas, they're actually suing cities that are trying to get the vaccine to the vulnerable first. And the reason why they're doing that is the same people who have spent the last year going, coronavirus ain't a real virus, are now all saying, what do you mean I'm part of the last group to get vaccinated? I want my vaccination now. And so they're basically putting aside the vulnerable, the elderly, healthcare workers, first responders, nurses, doctors, childcare providers. They're putting those people aside saying, I'm a rich, wealthy, suburban guy. Gimme, gimme, gimme. That's what they want to do. And I have got zero tolerance for that kind of, you know, just jackass mentality. Take care of the people who are dying from this first. I mean, I have zero doubt I'm going to be one of the last people that's vaccinated. I'm not joking. I have zero doubt I'm going to be one of the last people that's vaccinated because I'm relatively healthy. I'm not in a danger group. I'm being very careful about going out and seeing people, and we're trying our best to stay healthy. And so it's going to be a while. I'm not about to all of a sudden, especially the people who have been out there bashing on how serious this is, I'm not going to go out there and hammer on the system now that says let's take care of the needy people when all of a sudden a vaccine's available. The Michelle Benson, the Republican senator in the state, is basically trying to push for pharmacies. I'm sorry. Until we can get the vaccines we need, I don't like the idea of pharmacies being in charge of it for multiple reasons. One, I don't think it's necessarily within our best interest to make people go past a cash register every time they need to go get some kind of medication. Plus, I get the strong suspicion that the pharmacies will be, that's where you're going to get the abuse. That's where all of a sudden the 70-year-old who's got emphysema, they're not going to be able to get the vaccine. That it's going to be, you know, suburban family guy coming on out here saying, me and my six kids all need the vaccine right now. And we're not sick. We want the vaccine because we want to go to Mazatlan. So I'm against this idea. And, you know, I'm frankly, I think, can I just say for any Republican that wants to poke their nose into the healthcare world, that you, just a few years ago, stopped emergency insulin from being distributed in the state of Minnesota, an action, a decision by Republicans that led to people dying, people that would have been saved by the emergency insulin program. People died because the Republicans' first concern wasn't the Christian faith, wasn't other human beings. It was the profit margins for the corporation. And even just recently, the Republican Party, because it was more important for them to own the libs, they had a party and very likely killed one of their own senators because they insisted on no masks and no social distancing. We're having a party because we own the libs. And you killed one of your senators, likely killed one of your senators. So, no, I am not going to be very interested in hearing what the Republicans want to do here, because you guys are not concerned about Minnesotans. You're concerned only about dollars and cents. And then if the dollar and cents people tell you you can have a conscience, then you come on out with your sincere eyes. With your sincere eyes. I care about human beings. No, you guys don't. You don't. You care about money. And as a matter of fact, I think there should be a full investigation in how much money Michelle Benson's getting from the pharmaceutical industry, because the reality is this is not the time for basically making sure we divvy up vaccines for who can get the most profit margin off the things. Let the state do it, because we need to make sure the most vulnerable people get this vaccine first, not wealthy Republican donors who have been denying that coronavirus is a real thing, and then all of a sudden when the vaccine becomes available, they run into a pharmacy that they know the owner of and are able to get them and their family their vaccine. Nope. No, I'm 100% against this. Also, I did want to make sure I mention that under President Trump, the federal government gave most employers a free pass when it came to exposing workers to coronavirus, even in the case of large outbreaks. The inspections were few, the fines were tiny, now new regulations were non-existent. On Thursday, things started to change. Joe Biden plans to take his first step in reversing that approach by signing an executive order aimed at the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA. They're basically people responsible for protecting workers from hazards. The message is simple. It's time to get more aggressive. The order will direct OSHA to explore implementing what's known as emergency temporary standards, a new federal regulation that would require employers to take clear precautions against the virus or face penalties. So far, there have been some penalties, but the penalties have been almost non-existent. More than 400,000 Americans have died so far of COVID-19. Researchers have found workplace transmission to be a major driver of the pandemic, particularly in higher-risk fields like meat packing. Outbreaks in beef and pork plants appear to play a central role in community spread, like in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where more than 1,000 Smithfield workers were infected, and the city became a leading coronavirus hotspot at the time. Even though four Smithfield employees died, OSHA issued a fine against the company for just $13,494. Inspectors cited the vague OSHA clause for the violation because there is no clear coronavirus standard to point to. They killed four of their own employees, sickened 1,000 people, and under Trump's administration, the penalty was $13,000 for a company which basically probably made that within 20 minutes of the line working. For the last 16 months, the Trump administration, the Labor Department was run by Eugene Scalia, the longtime management side attorney known for fighting OSHA regulation on behalf of employers. The agency appeared to be closing out a high number of cases using the phone and fax method, trading letters with employers asking them to address hazards raised by workers rather than performing on-site inspections that are more typically lead to fines. OSHA also resisted issuing large fines above $100,000 or hitting employers with multiple fines that added up just quick. As of January 8th, it had leveled a total of $3.9 million in coronavirus-related fines based on 300 inspections. That equates to about $13,000 for each inspection that results in a citation. But enforcement is expected to get stronger under Biden. Well, thank God. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I've been very happy with is the Democrats did not cave on the immunity clause demands by the Republicans that these companies who knowingly killed their employees, who knowingly sickened their employees, who knowingly sickened and killed people in the community where they were located, do not get immunity from their behavior. And so you got to hold these companies responsible. I mean, we have way too much. I mean, I talked about Michelle Benson and the Republican Party. You look at how much everything is geared towards companies, profit margin, because they want their campaign donations. They want their big lobbying checks. That's the only thing that matters to Republicans. Caring for the American people, caring for Minnesotans should be your first goal. And yet, once again, here we are playing politics because, well, we didn't make sure the pharmacies are getting the vaccines. No, let's just get the vaccines that Trump lied about. Let's make sure the vulnerable get them first. And then once we have to roll out to the entire 5.5 million part of the state, the vast majority of us, then yes, we can look at this. But we're not going to allow Republicans to use a system to get cheated so wealthy donors can sneak them and their families to the front of the line while they go back out to their freaking blogs and talk about how this is not really a crisis. This is only the seasonal flu. I'm tired of this crap. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I have a little patience for ignorance, that's for sure. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Now, this is one of the reasons why I have become more and more progressive. I don't think I've necessarily moved too much on my political beliefs. I really don't. It's just this country went far to the right. And when I hear Republicans, once again, someone asked me, you know, what's the difference between a Republican and a Democrat when it comes in this country? And I said, I'll give you a great example with coronavirus. I said, I think we should do everything in our power to make sure as many people live. Period. That's the end of the sentence. You know, that's it. Done. Republicans will add the word, but, because they're about to take something which is not as important in those lives. They think that they'll basically by saying, well, we want people to live too, but we're now going to propose a whole bunch of things that basically are going to lead a lot of people dying, and we don't care. I love Jesus. Jesus doesn't love you guys. And it makes me mad because, you know, I come from the mindset, I'm a Catholic. Once again, the religious disclaimer, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. I'm Catholic. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, those are the four books of the Bible that make you Christian. End of story. That's it. I mean, don't give me, you know, Paul's letter to the Romans. Don't give me Leviticus. Don't give me Revelations. Don't give me Timothy. Don't give me any of these secondary, tertiary, lesser books of the Bible. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, the story of Jesus, the guy that is, you know, God came back to earth, died for our sins. He teaches you a lot in those books. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. He teaches you a lot. What he doesn't teach you is, hey, come on, guys. Insulin manufacturers need to make a massive profit. Who doesn't love a jet ski? Ha, 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 ha. Or they don't go on out there and say, hey, we're in the middle of a pandemic and we probably shouldn't have it, but we want to own the libs so bad and have a big party and rub it in their face that we held the Senate. Well, let's do it with no face masks and laugh in their face. What do you mean people are getting sick? What do you mean one of our caucus members died? And here we are. We're dealing with a god-awfully mismanaged problem with Trump in regards to the vaccine. And on top of that, we've got states where basically people are trying to say, we don't want to see the medical professionals get their vaccinations. We want the wealthy white Republican, you know, voters, the people that donate to their campaigns, those guys got to get their vaccines first. And I'm tired of this crap. No, Tim Walz is doing a great job. The governor is doing a great job. I want to see him stay, and I'm willing to follow his lead. We get all the vulnerable people inoculated? Great. Then let's open it up to the rest of the pharmacies, because we've got 5.5 million people in the state. It's going to take everyone to get on board. But I do not like the idea of trying to find ways to find people who have spent the last year denying coronavirus as a problem to allow them to find some way to get them a vaccination ahead of the people who desperately need it more. Jacob Fry has announced, by the way, I mentioned him a little earlier when we were talking about the Trump rally. Jacob Fry is, he's going to announce he's run for re-election in 2021. He beat former Mayor Betsy Hodges in the 2017 election and was confirmed he'll run again this year, launching a re-election campaign with endorsements from, among others, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. After a turbulent year in Minneapolis history, Frey has found himself, Jacob Fry found himself a target of criticism over the left on how he handled the George Floyd protests and riots, and criticism from the right over how he handled the George Floyd protests and riots. Fry rode to victory in 2017 after former Mayor Hodges herself found herself under the microscope over her administration's response to 2015 Jamar Clark killing. It is likely the police concerns will dominate Fry's reelection effort, too, as the fallout continues from Floyd's death. I don't know. I mean, it's... I don't know if the guy's got a chance. I know there's still a lot of people that are... they're upset, but the reality is I don't know. Clearly, one of the things we've seen since the George Floyd killing is the system in Minneapolis is broken because there are people that are acting as gatekeepers who shouldn't be. And so real reform, I don't necessarily think can happen. I don't think that has anything to do with Jacob Fry. I don't think that has to do with most of the city council. I think, you know, it's there are just these secondary and tertiary characters in Minneapolis who seem to have an insane amount of power when it comes to trying to fix the problems, and they don't have any intention of trying to fix the problems that we have in the city. So I don't know. I mean, I think he's got as good of a chance as anyone else, especially with the ranked choice voting. But, you know, it will be interesting to see how this campaign unfolds. I guarantee you he'd better be prepared, because there are going to be a lot of people screaming at him over the next few weeks, over the next few months in regards to what happened with George Floyd. We'll take a break. Come back. Hour number two when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Mike fell. Brett's over in the studio. Lindell fell over, man. He was swooning because I was just my masculinity was just too much for him. What do you think? Okay, and I'm gonna give me a quick second here. I'm gonna pull this up so we can watch if they're watching the live stream.
All right. So Matt, as we speak, is moving Mr. Lindell.
The cutout of Mike Lindell we have here in the studio. Because you could go buy one of these things. I don't know why you would ever do that, but thank you. No, thank you. I want you to notice how he's holding the pillow. What do you think that's exactly how he holds a woman? he hugs like he's picking up a corgi. That is. Okay. That's a real masculine man calling for martial law and all that good stuff.
You remember when it was last winter, I think it was in St. Peter, Minnesota, where somebody called the police because they saw a strange man clutching a pillow outside in January.
You fools put this guy, you put Lindell out behind the, okay, so they got the back door of the studio here, and I'll walk out the back door of the studio sometimes, and I'm like, ah! That is not who I want to run into in the hall back there. Are you going to hug me like I'm the pillow? I'm not Jane Krakowski. I'm more that Jonah guy in the writer's room. That's more me, dude. That just, no. Baldwin on that show, phenomenal. So a man was punched in the face by a fellow driver during a road rage incident in Waite Park, police say. Incident at 7 a.m. Wednesday happened between the driver of a Chevy Cavalier and the driver of a Ford Taurus. The Chevy driver was traveling south on 10th Avenue North. He noticed the Taurus approaching from behind at a high rate of speed. The Chevy driver tried to switch lanes, and the Taurus driver tried to go around him. Once again, the Chevy driver tried to switch lanes, and at what point the Taurus struck his vehicle. The Waite Park Police PD says the Taurus then cut in front of the Cavalier, and the two vehicles made contact again. The Taurus then hit the back bumper of the Cavalier, causing the Cavalier to spin around. The Taurus driver, a 55-year-old man from St. Cloud, got out of his car. And once again, this is the Ford. The Taurus driver was the guy that was driving aggressively. The 55-year-old man gets out of his car. He was from St. Cloud, approached the Chevy, yelling at the driver. Per police, he punched the driver's side window, causing it to shatter. He would have busted his hand if he did that. I'm going to guess he had rings on or something like that.
Oh, no kidding.
Then he punched the driver in the face. Both drivers were treated at the scene by Mayo Ambulance, but neither required hospital treatment. The 55-year-old has been booked into jail on second-degree assault, reckless driving, criminal damage. So bringing the news is getting you that one there. So, you know, it's always they love talking about when the violence happens in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Waite Park, get yourself under control there. What's going on up there? What's going on up there?
Got to get Gazelka, the rest of them on the case. Hearings, that's what we need.
Yeah, that's what we do. I mean, we'll take care of Understander while we can. So a question I want to ask you, because this is going to be one that we just talked about Jacob Fry running for mayor again in 2021. Remember, Minneapolis off your elections, really off your elections there next year. Question, should they shut down 38th in Chicago, the Cup Foods where George Floyd was killed by the police? Should that intersection be permanently shut down? Your thoughts, Brad?
At least in the immediate term, I think you have to do that. I think that's just a really bad look to open that up to traffic, I would think, just because of the significance of the site and how much people have hurt from seeing what obviously happened to George Floyd. It's a site that, unfortunately, gives us remembrance of something awful that happened. And I think in the immediate term and maybe even permanently, you do have to shut that down.
And I want to focus on the permanent thing here. If your choice is that after a year, we're going to reopen it to traffic of some point, might be limited, might just be bus traffic, or we're going to reopen it. Or in a year we make the decision, you know, or we just say, you know what? No, this is going to be needed for the city to heal. You know, if you had to make a choice on one of those, that it would reopen in some capacity in the future, route might be the same as it is today, it might be limited traffic, but cars will be going through there, buses will be going through there at some point, or keep it shut down, what would be your final call?
If I had to make the call, I would say shut it down.
I'm with you. Shut it down. Mm-hmm. You have such a crime here. That was such a shock, not only to the city, not only to the state, but to the country. It was so obscene and horrible that the location itself has come to bear witness on the tragedy that happened there. And henceforth, for you just to kind of act as if traffic should go back again as normal is negating that entire element of the discussion. And I also will say this. I have talked to people, and by the way, you're more than welcome to call us at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, and talk about what should they close down 38th in Chicago permanently, the site of where George Floyd was murdered by Minneapolis police. The two things, when I talk to people who want to reopen it, they say, one, well, it's not just that simple to reroute. That's a major traffic route north-south, particularly north-south. Not 38th per much, but north-south on Chicago. It's not exactly easy to just reroute that traffic someplace else. The first thing I say is, but you could. you could. And trust me, have you ever driven around the streets of Minneapolis? Half the dang things, it looks like you can go straight. No, I got to take a right turn here, and I'll eventually get around to where I need to go. You've done this before. You can change these things around. The other thing, and this is from what I've heard from people who are in Minneapolis, pro police. And by the way, we should mention here, I live in the city of Hopkins. I do not live in the city of Minneapolis. You live in what city?
Yep, I live in Minnetonka.
So Brett and I, are, even though we're adding our 5 cents here, this is a decision for the city of Minneapolis. And I, like I said, I think it's going to be a major discussion point in this next year with the mayor's race. The people that I know who are pro-police are very much against it because they feel as if, well, you know, what it will become if it gets shut down is a memorial to police brutality. Okay, you can get upset about that, but the reality is that's because massive police brutality happened there at that point.
Yeah, I wouldn't really buy that as being a memorial to police brutality. That just seems like a deflection type argument.
Well, and that's exactly what it is mm-hmm. that they and to a point it kind of is, you know, in the same sense is that there are plenty of places where you can go. And I talked about this. I went in South Carolina in Charleston. There's one of the things you will find is most of the plantation houses in the city of Charleston no longer have their slave quarters. And part of it was they were sold off after the Civil War when they couldn't have slaves, when basically all of a sudden they had to start paying people. They got rid of this and they sold off the land. The reality is because there's an insane amount of shame that came with having slaves. And if there is that one place I went to that still has their fully intact slave quarters, and you go through there and it's like, you people were horrible. What the hell is going on? There's a lot of shame. You should have shame. You should have to remember this because you kept slaves, and that's why you should be forced to have to kind of talk about that and acknowledge it and see it, and it should be recognized. You're upset about police brutality. Don't get upset about the people who want a place to remember George Floyd, Jamar Clark, anyone else. I mean, you know, Justine DeMond, for goodness sakes. Anyone else who is murdered by a cop in Minneapolis, maybe we shouldn't be murdering the people. I just call me wacky crazy. You know, I think that that's where your problem is coming in, is the argument that you're making is to a point irrelevant because the people that made this site a memorial were the police that killed George Floyd. I think we all can say, Brett, I think if I had my choice of George Floyd being alive today or shutting down 38th in Chicago for a memorial for George Floyd, I think I'd rather have George Floyd alive.
Yeah.
I think that that's not a real rocket science here. So the entire discussion about this is involved because police murdered the guy there. That's why it shouldn't be paved over. It shouldn't be just, you know, a plaque. It should be, you know, this was created by the police. And if you're offended by it, well, that's because the police did it. That's not because of George Floyd didn't ask to get murdered that day. And I think that the reality is that the scary part for a lot of people is, did you go down there and see when they had painted the names of all the people on the street, of the people that had been killed by police?
No, not that part yet.
That was back. I don't know if it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
That was stark. That was a really, I took some pictures. As a matter of fact, I'll get some pictures up on social media, on the blog. I'll put some pictures up on the blog about that. This has happened a lot. And because of what's happened and how it happened, I think you have the opportunity to recognize this is something that's been going on. Black community has been telling us for years. Latino community has been telling us for years. Native American community has been telling us for years, and we didn't listen to them. And it took a murder being filmed in front of our eyes for us to realize, holy crap, this is really going on. And so by turning it into not only a tribute to George Floyd, but a tribute to all the people who have been wrongly murdered by police and law enforcement, it doesn't put police in the best light, I'll be the first to say that, but I think the larger crime would be to sweep aside what has happened here in this country and what's been going on.
I was going to say, yeah, as you said, it doesn't put police in the best light, but guess what? Whose fault is that?
Exactly.
The police themselves.
Let's take Robert in really quick. Robert in Columbia Heights wanted to chime in. Welcome on in, Robert. You're talking to Brett and Matt.
Hi, Matt. Yes. I used to live on Elliott Street, literally a block and a half away from that exact intersection.
Yep.
I think the city of Minneapolis should turn that intersection into a roundabout. They could put up a monument for George Floyd there. I think Derek Chauvin should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law and even further. But anyway, then I moved to Northeast Minneapolis after that, and now I'm in Columbia Heights. But I literally lived a block and a half away from that intersection. Used to go there all the time to buy ice cream when it used to be a 7-Eleven and a Speedway on that intersection.
Thank you, Robert. And, Robert, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much. A roundabout. I don't know. I mean, roundabouts are not exactly monuments. I mean, it's generally a lot of people driving really fast. And the thing about a roundabout is they're generally, it's say you put something, say you put a statue to George Floyd in the middle of the roundabout. Well, you'd be looking at it from afar with a bunch of cars running in front of you. Because there's not, do you know many roundabouts where you have a crosswalk in the middle of the roundabout?
Not many, no.
I don't know of any. I'm trying to think of the ones that, I mean.
In the middle of a roundabout, no.
They have them on the other sides of it, right. But if you're going to put something in the middle, you have to have a crosswalk to get to the center.
That kind of eliminates the whole purpose of a roundabout.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if that would work. I think there are other streets, you know, east and west of there, which, you know, yeah. And this is going to be money. It's going to cost us. We probably have to widen the street a little bit on one of these secondary roads. But I think that you have to acknowledge the fact that this crime happened. And I'm sorry, I don't want to have another case where something bad happens to a minority group by the majority group, and it's 40 years, 50 years, like Duluth, when the hanging's up there. They finally, oh yeah, hey, guess what? We're going to put some statues up there. Really? It took you 100 years to do that? I think we have to look at it in more of a light of there's nothing wrong with acknowledging what had happened there. And, you know, don't make us have to go into, you know, my great-grandkids are going to be there at the George Floyd Memorial, and they, I guess we should have done this back then.
Yeah, I like the idea of making that a memorial to remember just the horrific history we've had of police brutality in this town. I think that's a good plan. And to be honest, people complaining about traffic, how many decades have we had Nicollet not be contiguous?
There's a Kmart in the middle of Nicollet Avenue. Yeah, you don't talk to me about, well, we gotta preserve our throughways. Well, I'll tell you what, how about we knock a hole through the old Kmart store there? Jeez, that's there exactly. And there's plenty of other streets exactly like that. I'll tell you what, let's take a break. Brett, I appreciate you stopping on by. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. If you have a thought on this one way or the other, let us know. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Should we shut down 38th in Chicago permanently? I think we should. And once again, I'll freely admit, I'm from Hopkins, so I'm speaking as an outsider here. But at the same time, I just don't think that this is, considering what happened there, and considering how that intersection has evolved over since late May and what it's become to represent, I think you can't just, you know, oh, well, yeah, we're back to bus routes and normal traffic. You know, we'll put up a little memorial like it's some sort of historical site on the side of a river someplace. I don't know. I think you got to shut it down. And reality is I think that whether you want to or not, I think it's going to get shut down. I think people want it to be shut down. And it's likely going to become a memorial to police brutality. And that's unfortunate, but that is a part of our society right now that we need to acknowledge. Steve is in Minneapolis. He wants to chime in on the intersection. Hey, Steve.
Hi. I live three blocks away.
Yeah, I think you had called in before about that.
Yeah, and I got really, really mixed feelings about this whole thing because it's a minor inconvenience for me. I don't care. You know, if you want to leave it the way it is, fine. But there's two other things that have to be dealt with. Is that is a major thoroughfare to where all the hospitals are. businesses in that area are having to deal with a lot of crap, you know, and there's crime. And, you know, my wife has suggested, why don't we just put an underpass there? Which would be great, but nobody wants to pay for that.
Steve, if you don't mind me asking you a few questions here. The hospitals, the medical facilities, they're west of that intersection, correct?
Actually, north.
The north, but okay, so it's on Park, right? Park in Portland?
You know, up north of Lake Street.
Okay, all right. So that's the Chicago there. Is there other roads? I mean, 38th, I mean, just looking at it from both different angles. On 38th, so an east-west road, is there another road there south of Lake Street and 31st that you could widen and turn into more of a thoroughfare, or is that not really a possibility?
Well, we have, you know, Park and Portland both one ways.
Yeah.
Which have been diminished to accommodate bicyclists, and therefore the speed limit has been lowered quite a bit. But, I mean, that's kind of your only deal there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe that's the deal, is you have to start looking at it. Maybe it's a rethinking on a lot of different levels. It's not just 38th in Chicago where there's a memorial there, but if we shut that down, you have to look at maybe repurposing and realigning the roads there. The north-south is the tough one, Chicago.
Absolutely.
That's the tough one. So, I got to believe it's probably east of there is the bigger problem, because you do have Portland, at least you do have the Portland and Park on the other side. Is it Bloomington is the next road north-south there? Next major one?
Yes.
No, it is Bloomington. That's already pretty built up. And I got to imagine that there's a lot of people that have bought a house in what was at one time a residential neighborhood who don't want to have a larger traffic experience outside their house. So there are some problems here. Maybe we do have to look at your tunnel idea. that's not a bad idea.
It's the only thing we can come up with, because you just can't just go back to normal. This neighborhood will never be what it was before. Although the crazy thing is, any house around here that is decent at all sells immediately.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's Minneapolis. Minneapolis, we have our problems, but Minneapolis, St. Paul still kicks ass, and that's at the end of the day. That's the deal. Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. Okay, maybe we need to start talking to the city guys, architects, kind of city planners, planning and zoning people. I mean, have you seen the project they're doing, the 94, Sasha, the 94 project downtown where and 35W, where they're redoing that entire 35W strip from, was it 42nd all the way through downtown Minneapolis?
That's right.
They can do a big project. I mean, I was at the Electric Fetus, and they were digging down. I mean, they must have dug down six stories there. I mean, it was way down. I mean, they can do that sort of thing. Obviously, you know, I can only imagine having your pickle shelf in your basement right next to a major roadway on the other side of the wall might not be the nicest thing. But maybe that's there's where you have to look at, is what would be the cost of a bridge over that? What would be the cost of, and I have zero doubt that the people that live there would probably not like that at all either. I just, considering what happened there, I don't know how you can just reopen things and kind of shrug your shoulders and say back to normal business. And once again, I like history. I like to learn history. You know, Grant made a mistake to make sure Rutherford B. Hayes was elected president after he did. He withdrew the troops from the South, and there became this we really kind of won the Civil War mentality from the Confederates. They pushing the ideas, the Confederate statues that went up everywhere, the names of the bases, the military bases being named after Confederate generals. I mean, there was just too much stuff that went on for too long. And now all of a sudden we're like, oh, wow, dear God, yeah, we probably shouldn't be allowing, you know, we're not going to start erecting heroes of the Nazi Germany statues all over the state, are we? We're not going to start putting up statues to the terrorists that took over the plane on 9/11, are we? Of course not. But here we are. We went out there because we allowed other people to dictate what history was, and we basically had to live with the scars of the Civil War for 150 plus years. And so we had the case where there was the lynchings in Duluth. And, you know, it almost feels like what happens is, okay, it happened, but everyone that was involved has to either retire or die because we don't want to hurt their feelings about what happened. And then we'll let it stew around for 20 or 30 years. And then someone will write a story about it that will appear in the local paper. And everyone will be like, oh, that's right. Boy, that was a travesty. That should have never happened. And eventually over time, 30 or 40 more years later, someone comes up with the idea, oh, maybe we should build a statue to remember that. I don't buy the 100-year thing. I don't buy it. I mean, we as a nation have done a real crap job of acknowledging when bad things have happened, generally at the hands and expenses of white people. It has. For goodness sakes, I mean, has really many, many white Americans ever learned Native American history? For goodness sakes. It's only until later in my life I realized, like, oh my God, why aren't we teaching this? We need to learn this stuff. But there's a complication here, but I think my problem here is this, is if your complication is, well, traffic could be busier on other streets, that's not enough of an argument for me to remove the memorial that's built down there for George Floyd. That's not. And it's easy for me to say, because I don't live in the city, and I'll be the first to say that is a flaw of my argument. I will buy that. And if you want to dismiss me, you can. But I don't know if you ever can go back. You know, hey, do you see where that Hyundai is parked over there? Hey, that's where George Floyd was murdered. Really? I don't think that's showing respect. You know, I don't think, you know, forcing people to get out of their car and walking out to a plaque that is only visible when you're standing right in front of Cup Foods is a good idea. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. When we come on back, Sue, I'll take your phone call. Plus, I got a really ugly trend that I'm noticing within the Republicans right now. We'll get to that in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Hello to the people who are watching the show via the Facebook live stream. You go either to AM 950 Radio or listen, of course, over at Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show. In Australia, they're watching us this morning. Yeah, this morning. In case you're wondering why I'm fondling a picture of Mike Lindell, the Mike Pillow guy that you cut out in the studio, it's because he and I are sweet, sweet lovers. No, it was a story early in the day. You can podcast the show. We're on SoundCloud. You can find out. It's something about him and a 30 rock star. And, you know, he is just one big snuggly pillow, isn't he?
Do you have another scoop for the Daily Mail about you and Mike Lindell?
Oh, just I wish he would hold me like he holds that queen size extra firm. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. There is a horrible joke I just came to mind. I am going to move to the callers, though. Sue is in Golden Valley. Thank you very much, Sue. Thanks for holding.
Hi. I wanted to say I think that there should be a really substantial monument. It should be a closed and important area because it is not even just a local thing. It caused the movement internationally.
Yes.
And it affected people, you know, in Europe, and it's, you know, it's not just a tiny little local thing. So
do you think the intersection should be closed down permanently then?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I don't know so much about the street so much, but I think there should be like an artist hired to make a really important sculpture of some kind or something that's really substantial and meaningful and, you know, to really be there for a long time.
Sue, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. It does bring up the interesting question. What if you reopened it, but the city instead bought the building, Cup Foods, and tore it down and built a memorial there on that site? Now, once again, I'm not a big fan of eminent domain, so you'd have to buy it from the individual. But, you know, should the city do something like that, maybe, where they buy the actual business and then they can have an actual specific thing and possibly reopen it? I don't know. I got to believe that would probably be cheaper than moving the intersection. But at the same time, would that, I think the intersection itself has become the memorial. So I think, I don't know if that's that easy. Tony is in Seattle, Washington. Tony, thanks for calling. Thanks for being on hold. I appreciate the phone call today.
Oh, hey, Matt. Thanks. I'm a former Minneapolis resident. In fact, I grew up in Minneapolis, so I know that area somewhat up until now. I'm in favor of a memorial, but a question I had for you is, when is the actual trial supposed to take place?
Right now, I believe it's in March. They've separated. Chauvin is going to be tried differently than the other three officers. I believe that was still under because of COVID concerns. But that trial starts, I believe, here in March, and then the other trials, I think, is later this summer. So that's the game plan there. So, but yeah, I mean, I would like to see some kind of plan in place before we get to the end of these trials. I think that would at least, you know, help out, give people some idea of that. By the way, Seattle, love that town. Head on over to Ivar's for me, okay? Get some of those clams.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got it. Well, I have a recommendation. I'm kind of a picky fish eater. The only Ivar's I go to is the one on the water. One on the waterfront. So
okay, got it. I'm writing that down, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, you might want to wait, because, like I said, we've had our own little protest issues out here, so it's kind of been an interesting time. But as far as, like I said, the memorial, I'd like to see some type of memorial that is set up. And I think, well, when I come back on the next trip through, I'd like to see the actual site, because all I have is just pictures. In fact, that's how I discovered you, because I wanted get information on the actual riots than what I was getting on CNN and all the big cable networks, because, you know, you guys are maybe, you know, the locals, and you know more on the inside about what's going on. So
Tony, I appreciate the phone call. I get into something else. I appreciate you finding us. Thank you. I really do appreciate you finding us. I agree with you. I think a lot of people need this. And by the way, when you talk about the Seattle protests, I mean, this goes back to my argument of why you have to put something there. We're tired of people not hearing us. You know, people are tired of people not hearing us. Of, you know, I was thinking about protesting, and, you know, remember when the GOP convention was here in St. Paul, and they put the it was 2012. The protest zone was like 3 miles away from the XL Energy Center in like a caged area in the back lot of an industrial park. And you could protest in the caged area from like 3 until 5 on Sunday. And there you go. And then people said, see, we gave you a chance to protest. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. Now, this is not so much about protesting. It's about remembering. And we have to figure out something. 952-946-6205. Moving into a different thing, I want to bring up something which is just a smidge real disturbing. In the first 24 hours of the Biden presidency, there has been some interesting reactions from the Republicans who are the ones who, after the far right loon balls tried to overthrow our government, the terrorists and the traitors tried to overthrow the American government, these are the people who are like, we need unity. We need to come together.
All right. So Biden becomes president, and which was something they were – the problem was that they were denying reality for so many months. You know, you want to start coming together. Well, acknowledge the fact Joe Biden won. We move forward. That lasted about 20 seconds because, you know, so far it's they're allowing Biden to get away with everything. I mean, watching Harris Faulkner, who used to be on Channel 5 here in town, who's now on Fox News, talk about how the press secretary, I've never seen the press secretary treated so nicely by the press. It's the first day. And frankly, I got to tell you the truth. I watched the first press conference. Holy crap. Competence. I couldn't believe it. It was competence. But because Harris Faulkner wanted them, her, I guess, beaten live on national television and dragged from the room, you know, they're acting as if they're ever, the media always loves these Democrats. I actually thought they were, the questions that were being asked were a little obnoxious yesterday. The, well, what happens when Mitt Romney doesn't go and do what you want him to do? That's a hypothetical on a hypothetical, so no, let's not do that. There's another strain of attack coming after Biden after his speech, which piggybacks on a local story which I have been talking about. And I'm going to read this. This is not just once. I mean, there's a local angle on this, but I want to read the three national stories I found on this. All of them come from Fox News. After the inauguration of President Biden and Vice President Harris on Wednesday, Fox News critiqued the 46th president's speech, taking issue with Biden's strong denouncement of nativism, racism, and white supremacy, which they suggested might offend Trump voters. Okay, we're not trying to upset Trump voters. We're trying to upset the racists. How about we go out there? The racist pigs. We're going to, you know, we're insulting them, not Trump voters. Denouncing nativism, racism, and white supremacy has apparently upset Fox News host Martha McCallum on Fox News and Fox News contributor Dan Henninger, who is also the deputy editorial page director of the Wall Street Journal. Trump supporters might be asking, why is he bringing up nativism and fear and telling lies for power and profit in the middle of an inauguration speech? I don't know if you saw who's been... No. The problem we have is we had the most racist president in decades. In the White House, and he enabled racism and white supremacy. He told the Proud Boys to stand back and stand by. He told there was good people within the KKK and the Nazis, for goodness sakes. That's why he brought it up. They went on, their outrage went on to say, is President Biden talking about Donald Trump or is he talking about the people who voted for Trump? He also says, I think a lot of them, he said, referring to Trump voters, would be entitled to sit out there and say, I'm not that person. Okay, we've talked about this before. The best you can say if you're a Trump voter, especially if you voted for him twice, was that you're okay with a lot of racism. And you might be able to try to say, you know, there's other things. I like how he treats the economy. Well, he destroyed the economy, so that can't be it. I like a smaller government. For God's sakes, he's actually made government a lot larger. He has. Oh, he's good for trade. No, he's annihilated trade. Nothing the guy did was positive. So you sitting there and making the argument that any traditional Republican rationale and reason for you liking a Republican is why you voted for Trump is just plain garbage. He is a racist, though. And trust me when I can say this, I don't care what Adolf Hitler's education policy was or transportation policy or his forestry program was. I'm not voting for the guy because he was Adolf freaking Hitler. So you can sit there and try to say they're dismissing us because they saw us vote for the racist guy twice. And once again, Trump is not Hitler. But you did vote for a racist twice in many cases. So whose problem is that? Now, that being said, that's not the only person that did this. Host of Fox and Friends today blasted Democrats after Joe Biden denounced racism, nativism, fear of demonization during his inaugural speech. Biden also pledged to defeat political extremism, white supremacy, and domestic terrorism. The host of Fox and Friends seemed to take the attack on racism personally. Dividing America has been a Democratic political strategy, Fox News host Will Kane opined in the next morning after his swearing-in. Name the line which divides us, whether it be race or societal or a political party. Dividing us has been a political win for the Democratic Party. I don't have any problem if your argument is that the Democratic Party shouldn't put a line down with racists on one side and the non-racists on the other. I'm okay with that. If that's a bridge too far, do you understand? You know, I'll put a line down on the people who smoke meth and the people that don't smoke meth. And by us saying, hey, you're smoking meth, doesn't make me a bad guy for pointing out you're smoking meth, okay? Just saying. If you want to live that life, fine, Kane said, but then don't turn around and preach that you are more virtuous than others when you call out racism? Co-host Steve Ducey then suggested that Biden's inaugural speech was divisive because it condemned racism. Another of the show's host, Earhart, agreed. If you're pro-life, it doesn't mean you're racist, she complained. If you like lower taxes, once again, here you come back to the thing where it's like, lower taxes. Well, no, he actually didn't give us a tax break, and our tax is about to go up because of Donald Trump. Pro-life, for God's sakes, what? He's got concentration camps in this country, and there are forced hysterectomies, reports of forced hysterectomies on immigrant women. Pro-life, shut up. My God. And how many executions did he do in the last few days? He had a drive-through going on out there for executions. Then comes Karl Rove. Karl Rove came on out. The latest Fox News personality to be offended after Joe Biden declared white supremacy in his inauguration speech, or decried it on his, his white supremacy in his inauguration speech on Wednesday. Whether it's COVID, the economy, or racism, they're talking. They are talking everything down. Yeah, we're talking down racism. Yeah, that's a bad thing there, Carl. It's like, you know, you dropping trow and self-gratifying for everyone to see. We can condemn that. That's a bad thing for you to do. But king-size extra firm pillow, you say. Wow, that's impressive. That's impressive. You should be watching the show. It's radio for your eyes. Needless to say, you can talk down to racists. How dare you, Matt? Those guys, do you know how hard it is to put up a cross to burn? That's some tough work. No, you can rip on the racists. Needless to say, clearly there is some sort of national argument on this. I'll explain that when I do come back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. They seem to be taking the side of the racist. Wow. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. You know, this is, okay, so what you have is, and this is not just one show, it's not just one person, it's people from the Wall Street Journal, it's Karl Rove, it's the Fox News host. You have multiple people out there suddenly and strangely defending racism. That how dare President Biden criticize racists? What is amazing is I have been ripping on Jennifer Carnahan, the head of the Minnesota GOP, because she here as well, I believe it was on Tuesday night, put out a tweet calling on Ken Martin to apologize for the following quote. You're either on the side of Nazis, white supremacists, and far-right groups, or you're on the side of democracy, liberty, freedom, and our Constitution. And Jennifer Carnahan goes on to say, language like this does nothing but create division and inflame tensions. And I have read that about 80 times. And I keep coming up against that. How are you this dumb that the great defense you have is Nazis and white supremacists? and then acting as if someone criticizing the Nazis is somehow the bad guy because they're not more tolerant of the Nazis, a group of people who are known as one of the most intolerant group in the history of mankind. But the fact that you are now, not only have we seen Jennifer Carnahan, and I haven't had time to start looking around at other state Republican parties and seeing what's being said there. I mean, I will say the thing about Carnahan, which was interesting, was the Wisconsin GOP, who has been notoriously extremist far right, actually canned the guy in the St. Croix County over there who had put up the webpage that was talking about time to go to war or whatever it is, time to fight, whatever the case may be. They got rid of him because they said it was too extremist in the message. The Minnesota Republican Party canned a county Republican official for bringing up Nazis this last summer. So what in the world is going on to where the heck the Minnesota GOP chair seems to be taking on the side of defending Nazis, and clearly Fox News, the Wall Street Journal's guy, Karl Rove, they're all on the, how dare you make fun of and dismiss white supremacists. Then it dawned on me. They are terrified of a third party starting up. When Trump, the day before he left, started floating around the idea of maybe I'll just start my own political party, the Patriot Party. All of a sudden, I think what happened was every Republican realized, holy crap, if I lose the racist vote, if I lose the Nazi vote, if I lose the white supremacist vote, I am no way on the planet I'm going to win my seat again. And so what I think has happened, and this is pure speculation, is that the Republican Party said, fine, well, if we can't lose this base, so that the decision was made to go on out there and drive the narrative that Nazis, racists, and white supremacists are the real victims here of the big, mean Joe Biden, who's just not tolerant enough because he's not more tolerant of the Nazis and racists and white supremacists. I think that's exactly what it is. I think the Republican Party is so terrified of losing the, because let's face it, that has become a large part of their base. And while I will agree that I don't think every Republican who voted for Trump is a racist, there's a lot that are okay with a racist. There's a lot that are racist light per se. And there is a large portion of them who are indeed, yep, card-carrying racist. Look at some of the shirts we saw over at the Capitol rally. Those were Trump fans who came to Washington, D.C. at the behest of Trump. They have realized that if they say racism isn't good, that they will lose every political race that they're in because they'll leave. They'll just stay home. The racists, the white supremacists, the Nazis, they might not have a third party, but they won't come vote for a Republican. And so this seems to me, like I said, wild speculation, this seems to me just to be an attempt to try to stave off their entire base or a large portion of their base from disappearing from the face of the, from Election Day. And I can tell you right now, I don't know if that's going to work for you guys. Good luck with that. But I don't think it's going to work for you guys. We're done. Native Roots Radio, they're up next. Have a good one. Till tomorrow. See ya.